Good morning. I have a number of things to say before I start this year, but the first one will be, you know how it always is, you read an item in the paper about somebody who was shot at in the West Bank last night, so I get a call at about 8:15 this morning. I have a secretary in Harnoff, Ruth Pepperman. It's her son-in-law, and he was hit seriously, but thank God bullet went through a cheek and through some other part. His eyes may be affected, thank God not his brain, and his wife, who was sitting beside him, succeeded in stopping the car and then getting him to the closest medical help, a station of Tzahal. So we will learn for Refuah Shleima for Moshe Rafael Ben Aliza, together with all the others who are still in hospital since the recent war. Moshe Rafael Ben Aliza. And then on the other side we have guests from West Hempstead here this morning, old friends of West Hempstead, Sharon and Heshy Sokol, visiting one of their children who was here. They are big Ohavei Eretz Yisrael. I can tell you, they may be sitting in West Hempstead, they're in Ma'arav Hempstead, but their heart is in the Mizrach. He said, what did he say again? Levi the Mizrach. That's what Rabbi Ali said. That's what he thought, yes. Levi the Mizrach, Vonochi, the Southwest Hempstead. Right. It's one of those mornings that there's a lot to say, so the best thing to do is to begin. Don't be intimidated by that first source. Don't be intimidated. Just sit back, relax, and we're going to go through it. And then I have to make sure that I get to the things that are very current nature that are extremely important. This is the introduction of the Netziv to Sefer Shemot. The Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who wrote that absolutely outstanding, Gevaldig is the best word, set of Chumashim with the Perish of the Netziv. So he has an introduction. His introduction to Bereshis we learned some while ago. Powerful, powerful introduction. Now we're going to take a quick look. Just follow me. Halt Cup. Maybe every so often I'll tell you the line we're on. And since you have line numbers, you'll be able to follow me. This book, what we're learning now, this book is called by the Medrash Sefer Shemot, as it says in Bereshit Rabbah, by Yehor, Neged Sefer Shemot. It's called Shemot. That doesn't come as a surprise to you. The Ramban, Sofa Sefer, the Ramban at the end of the Sefer calls Sefer Shemot, he gives it another name, Sefer HaGeula, the Book of Redemption. Zulat Rabbeinu Bahar, the Baal Halachot Gedolot, he has a different name for this Sefer, and it's a name which in fact appears in the Gemara. So Sifro HaKadosh Yikra'ehu, he calls it Sefer Sheni, the second book. Not Shmos, not Sefer HaGeula, Sefer Sheni. The Kechoshev, because he lists there the Chamisha Chumshei Torah in a way that you never heard it before, most probably. He says the five Chumashim are Sefer Bereishis, Chumash Sheni, Shmos, Sefer Kohanim, Book of the Kohanim, that's HaGikra, Chumash HaPikudim, the Chumash of the senses. What's the plural for sensei? How do you say one senses? Two senses. Huh? senses. Senses. I mean, counting, we're talking about not as in common sense or tea sense. We're talking about counting. A census is taken, say, in Parashat Bamidbar, and another census is taken in Parashat Pikudei. So it is the book of two Pikuds. And Mishnah Torah, the last one, which is called Mishnah Torah, where Torah is reviewed. Evchenu b'sota, so it says, the Gemara in Sota says, Lo kederech shechalukin b'chumash ha-pekudim, Ela kederech shechalukin b'chumash sheni. He brings the Gemara in Sota, where the Gemara refers to Shmot as chumash sheni. V'shutot rabbeinu nitan l'lamdeinu bina, and from this expression of our rabbis, we can learn to understand many things. Shelo b'chinam shinu Hashem b'zeh ha-sefer. It's not for naught that they change the name of this sefer different than the others. Because if this sefer is Sheni, then you know what it should have been? The Svarim, the five Chumashim, should have been Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi, Rivi, Chamishi. To have one in the middle called Sheni, a Sheni needs a Rishon before it, and a Shlishi after it. Another way to call it. In other words, there's something jarring about the difference in calling it Chumash Sheni. If you call all of the Chumashim by a name, Reishis, Shemos, Kohanim, Pekudim, Mishnah Torah, okay. If you call them all Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi, that's okay. But if four of them have a name, and one is called Sheni, there's something jarring about that, which tells us to sit up and take notice. Or it should have been called a name with regard to something that appears in the Sefer, like Yitzias Mitzrayim or Matan Torah. You could have called it Sefer HaYitzia, Sefer Matan Torah. Kemosha Kore Sefer Mamidba Sefer Begudim. Kemosha Kal Savla Vimakom Tam. Hello? Bolulam Deinu. You know what the name Chumash Sheni comes to teach us? Dizeh HaSefer B'yichud Hu Sheni L'Sefer Reishis HaBriyah. That this book is the second half of the Sefer which talks about the creation of the world. Ki Hu Chelek Sheni Mizeh HaSefer, it's the second part. Hainu, bo nigmar seder habriyah. By calling it Chumash Sheni, we're saying that the creation that began in Bereshis ends in Sefer Sheni. And the two are interrelated. And Chumash Shmot, that you know, the rest of them call it Shmot, but we now call it Sheni. Chumash Shmot is the continuation, and I would say the successful and grand conclusion of what was begun in Bereshit. Hainu bo nigmar seder habriyah. Creation ends there. Ukvar moram tal. You may remember at the very beginning of Chumash, in the grand first Rashi. After the first part of the Rashi, Rashi says on the word Bereshis, Rashi says a number of meanings. What's the meaning of the word Bereshis? Bereshis means because of Israel, who are called Reshit Tevuato, the beginning, the finest of what God created, or Bishvil HaTorah, because Torah is also called Reshit. Hashem Konani Reshit Darko in Mishlei. Shlomo HaMelech says that the beginning of God's way is Torah, because of the Reshis, because of Yisrael who are called Reshis. Perush, line 11. Taklis Ha'olam Bechlal, the purpose of the world was that there should be one nation, at least, on the face of this earth, which is God's people. One people. The Zelonishlan. And that purpose of creation was not completed until Israel left Egypt, and then they achieved their ultimate goal, which was not only did he need a people who would represent him on the face of this earth, but that people's entire form had to be dramatically changed when they became the people of Torah by virtue of the fact that they stood at the foothills of Mount Sinai and they received Torah that God gave from heaven. So in other words, a world without the Jewish people is not the kind of world God wanted. He had to have that people. I would say, therefore, and I'm going to keep throwing in these things, Bereshit and Shemot both are the story of creation. In Bereshit, we're talking about the creation of individuals. There's an Avraham, a Yitzchak, a Yaakov. There are the 12 Shvatim. There is not yet a nation. The nation is going to come in Sefer Sheni. So in creation, there were two parts. There was the creation of individuals. There was the coming into being, the formation of individuals. And there's the formation of a... more than that, of course. There are two sides to God, but the two are absolutely one. Shnayim Shein Echad, two that are one. God is the God of creation, and he's the God of history, and you cannot separate the two. There's no such thing as a God of creation who is not involved in the events of this world. The soul of the God in whom we believe is a God who is intimately involved in the world, and even more so, intimately involved in the story of the Jewish people. So therefore, the end or the completion of creation is these two halves coming together, God of creation and God of history. Sefer Bereshit is, yes, the story of creation, it's the story of nature, Teva. There are no great miracles that shake us or shiver our timbers during all of Sefer Bereshit. Sefer Sheni becomes the book of miracles. And the same God who is the God of nature is also the God of miracles. In Sefer Bereshit, God appears as, from the very beginning, really, as Elohim. 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 The word Elohim has the same numerical value as Hateva, the God of nature. In Sefer Bereshit, he is Elohim, the God of Teva. In Sefer Shemot, he becomes the God of miracles, Nes. And therefore in Elohim also, he is the God of judgment. In Sefer Shemot, he appears to the world as Yud-Kei Bav-Kei. And for that matter, we will see it at one and the same time. I will punish Egypt, and I will take my people Israel out to freedom. One arm rescues, the other arm punishes. At one and the same time, God is invoking his judgment and justice and punishment upon the Egyptians, and at the same time, he is expressing his great mercy, compassion, warmth, and closeness to the Jewish people. So the two stories, the Nitzitz says, I mean, I've elaborated a little bit on my own over here, but basically the Nitzitz is saying that these two stories are one. You can't separate story one from story two.
at the very end of this piece, we're going to go a little further yet, but at the very end of this piece, he says, now you can understand why Sefer Shemot begin, or Sefer Sheni, I have to watch myself, why Sefer Sheni begins with a Vav, Ve'ele Shemot B'nei Yisrael, and these are the names. It should have started, Ele Shemot B'nei Yisrael, these are the names of the children of Israel, Ravei Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, etc. Ve'ele, you know what that Vav is? That's the great Vav HaChibur, the Vav that connects Sefer Sheni with Bereshit. Because it's all one story. Never the twin shall be separated. These are one. These are one. Let's go a little further. Ubazel nichlal gam zeh hatachlis sheyuruyim liot laor goyim lahamidam ayudiyat elokei olam. And what was important in this Sefer Sheni is that Jews will become, should become, have to become a light unto the nations, and that they should be the one who will disseminate the knowledge of the eternal God in the world. I don't know how God planned on this happening when they despise us so much. We certainly are the most despised people on the face of this earth. Does it upset any of you? Doesn't upset me, boy. I'm proud. Okay. Well, you know, this is the kind of family I don't have to choose. You know, I don't necessarily have to be a member of the family of nations. Often vague to be a member of that Fashtugana family. Alright, let's see where we'll go. 18, take a look at line 18. Nimsa. So what emerges is that Yitzchak Mitzrayim Ha Yogamar HaBriyah, the exodus from Egypt was the completion of creation. Om Matan Torah, or the giving of Torah is the completion of creation. Kimuvur Od, Birgaba, in Medrash Gaba, in Bereshis, Bishus HaTorah, Shinikiris Reshis, in the source of Torah, and then he brings that famous Gemara that Rashi brings, Vayere Vayivoke Yom Hashishi. All of creation was waiting for the great Yom Hashishi, the sixth day of Seth Sivan, in which the Jewish people will receive Torah. And when God said to them, in the Tabu Yisrael of Torah, if Israel accepts Torah, good, I'm going to send you back to absolute nothingness. Nimsa therefore means that Matan Torah is Gemar HaBriyah. That's the end of creation. That's the end of creation. Line 23. The Das Torah Eitzel Am Hashem Hu Kumotat Enoshi Umidot Yisharot Shel Torat HaAdam. What Torah wants to teach the Jewish people and through the Jewish people, the world, to teach them how to be mention, how to conduct yourselves like righteous and good people. I said, Avagav, Shelohi Gia Tevelu Moloa, Lezer Hashlemus, Arachas Manrav, Achabir Shemai, Boris, even though he says mankind did not really achieve yet that goal. Of being yashar, being right, correct, straight, honest, decent, moral, ethical. But that will come. I have a feeling, I mean, the Nitziv wrote this about 150 years ago. I don't know if you take a look at our world now, I don't know what it would say. Maybe it will most probably be something that will be accomplished when the Mashiach comes. That a world should be yosher, straight. Alright. Okay, so here we have two Svarim. Bereshis, and then we have Sefer Sheni. Now what begins to happen in the second Sedra of Sefer Sheni, that's number two. You don't have to count the number of Svarim there. I'll tell you right now. there are 10. These psukim appear in Parashat Va'eda. Some of them may be in Bo. By each one of the makos, God says precisely what the point is. V'yadu Mitzrayim ki'ayi b'nei Hashem Mitzrayim shal modrayim God. V'zotegah, through this you will know that I'm the Hashem. Leman teda, but then they're being taught more. In other words, the makos were never merely to inflict punishment on the Egyptians. If they suffered, believe me, they deserve it. They deserve it. I don't know why last night I started thinking of Larry Dürfner writing a piece on Sefer on Parshas Va'era. God, absolute disproportionate punishment. Not only that, the number of civilian dead. The civilian dead. Now, if every miserable thing that they said about us in the course of the last 3 weeks, and it will still resonate in the world for who knows how long to come, and say it all about the Rebbein Shalom. But the Rebbein Shalom doesn't get shook up, you understand, from the United Nations or the Larry Dürfners, etc., etc., of this world. But the Rebbein Shalom is saying, no, 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 no. There are no innocent civilians. The Egyptian in the street went into Jewish homes to find children and throw them into the mouth. There were no innocent civilians. I don't know how many innocent civilians there are in Gaza. Innocent civilians. Disproportionate, you understand. So to the chutzpah. The chutzpah of taking an army that has most probably sacrificed more soldiers so as not to hurt innocent civilians, in quotation marks, and accuse us of the... it's unbelievable. They can sugar that one sometimes. So I know what your answer is. No, they don't read the papers. Don't listen to the radio. It's better for your health. So I have a weakness. I can't help it. Leman teda kiena shanti dikhat. God ups the ante. Not only is he teaching them, he wants to teach them that there is a God. He wants to teach them that there is no other God like him. Leman teda, in order that you should know ki ein kashel lakenu, there is none like God our God. The lesson continues. Leman teda ki ani Hashem bekerev haaretz. That's what we said about Sefer Sheni. In order that you should know there is no God like me in the midst of the earth. I'm here. I'm involved. Avur teda, so that you should know ki ein kamodi b'chol haaretz. There's none like me in the whole earth. Leman teda ki la Hashem haaretz. You have to learn something else. Not only am I on this land, you should know, it's all mine. It's all mine. I created it. Is that a continuation of Sefer Bereshis? It sure is. V'yadakam, you will know k'in Hashem. L'man teidun, in order that you should know Hashem, y'afla Hashem b'mitzrayim v'yisrael, that God is going to differentiate between the Egyptians and between Israel. These will suffer, and these are going to be redeemed. Twice it says at the end, V'yodu Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim in particular, shall know, Ki'ani Hashem. The purpose of all the Makis was in order to let Mitzrayim, and by extension the world, know that there is a God. I'm going to say something that bothers me. This morning, listen, they used to accuse me of
new American president, this is today, this one, the new American, the editorial, the new American president will no doubt have noted Ismail Haniyeh's Thanksgiving speech broadcast on Hamas TV, in which Gaza's prime minister declared, Allah has granted us a great victory. Not for one faction or party or area, but for our entire people. I saw it, and it's been counted on. You know why I got sick? I'll tell you why I got sick. But you saw in Shabbos how a prime minister, Ehud Olmert, spoke about the successful conclusion. And he thanked this one, and he thanked that one. The name of God was not uttered. And at the same time, I take a look on TV, and I see, I very rarely watch TV. Very rarely. And of all things, I see on the news, one of the goodbye parties for Condoleezza Rice. The last two sentences she said were, God bless you all. God bless America. Shomu Shamayim. Did you hear Libni say God bless Israel? Did you hear Barak say it? What's wrong with these people? What's wrong with these people? We are an Am Hashem. And they don't get it. Now, the purpose of this year is going to be in order to make it clear, if you don't get something as simple as that, then you are, in fact, a source of great danger to the Jewish people, because you cannot see what's happening in the world with any degree of clarity. I'm a glutton for punishment. By the way, if Reich got upset about that, there was a letter to the editor yesterday by this guy, Mark Lesnick, from Beit Shemesh. One thank you was unfortunately absent from the gratitude both Prime Minister Olmert and Defense Minister Barak expressed to several individuals connected with the Gaza operation. Throughout the ordeal, we learned of the many miracles that transpired, of how all the danger notwithstanding, so few Israelis lost their lives in battle and on the whole front. We saw many individuals who had narrowly escaped death standing next to homes destroyed by enemy missiles, and heard them utter two simple words. Thank God. Baruch Hashem. If only our leaders would recognize that there is someone, capital S, watching over us, and direct some gratitude in his, capital H, direction. End of letter. It's a timer. Just now I was up in Avi Berman's office, and he tells me, someday, I don't think I'll be able to tell the story over with all the details as he told it to me, but some of our people from the Israel Center went down to Azar with 200 pairs of tefillin, and soldiers were putting on tefillin one after another. You understand? In every war that we have ever fought, invariably, inevitably, there will be a picture of a soldier with talus and tefillin on attack. That's the only way even the average Chiloni in this country knows that the Jewish people is at war. That's the symbol. The first night that they went in, they kept showing on TV over and over again the eighth night of Hanukkah lighting the menorah. There is no Chiloni secular way in the world to show that a Jewish army is on the march. And nearly every day there was another picture, a minion davening, shielded by a tank. I kept getting calls. A nephew of mine was filmed all over the world, you know, standing on a tank with his talus and tefillin davening. Our leaders have to know. L'man teda, ki ani Hashem, b'keret hot.
They don't know it. They don't know. It's a tragedy. It's a profound tragedy. We are surrounded by Hashgacha Pratis, God's divine providence, and hope. They should be thrown out on the heads just for that.
So Avi told me that they look, but there's a place, there's a marzipan place over here in Agrippus. It's called marzipan, yeah. And I think it's under, it's Ragalach, yeah. So I understand that it's under the OU. And they went down with a lot of this OU stuff. And one of the soldiers starts speaking with Avi and says, I can't tell you all the details of the conversation, but it turns out he's an NCSY boy from Memphis, Tennessee. And he became from through NCSY. And because of NCSY, he ultimately went to Yeshiva, and he came to Eretz Yisrael, and he was now in the army. And he says, we've seen God before our eyes every day. He described how what's necessary in order to take over a house. Every building that they took over was a major operation because the booby trapped them. Anyway, they took over a building and then they put sandbags over the window with one little place for a fella who's supposed to stand there with a gun to watch if anybody approaches and shoot. And shoot. Had to be there for hours on end. And he asked his fellows, give me a tillamool. So he has his gun and he's saying tillam. He had finished saying tillam and he wanted to put the tillam down. So he bent down, put down the tillam. A bomb went flying through the window. He was unhurt. He was putting the tillam down. That, does that maybe shiver somebody's spine? There's a relation with that. And Ehud Olmert and Barak in Livni can't say it. I used to hear this years ago, and I wasn't moved by the complaint, but I am now deeply, deeply hurt because I hold that it is a symptom of the danger in which we find ourselves. So I'll tell you, I'm a real glutton for punishment. I pulled it out. I thought I did. I did. I washed my hands afterwards. I pulled out Shimon Peres' book, The New Middle East. The story of the Oslo... Now, I have to tell you the story. Don't think that I'm stomach. The book, when printed, sold for $36. I was walking, this was written by the I was in Toronto, and I looked in the window of a bookstore, they have it marked down to $4.99 Canadian. So I said, $4.99. Tennis looks shiny, you know. I can commit myself. And as I come in, by the way, I also bought another book then. Netanyahu's book against terrorism was marked down to $10.99. Oh, I feel good. If they would have marked him down lower than the terrorists, that would have been a shaman carpet. So I told the guy, listen, keep Netanyahu's book at $10.99. Don't drop it from there. And I want to buy both of them. So he said, yes, Rabbi Gold, are you going to New York? So I'm not sure. Well, why do you want to know? You can get Paris' book for a buck in New York. So I start reading. He describes it's the wee hours of the morning after a whole night up. Finally, August 10th, I believe it was, 1993, as they are preparing the document, the Declaration of Principles, the Oslo Accords to be signed. And of course, he waxes very poetic, as he is capable of. And so he's supposed to see in your image, as
as the by the dawn's early light, that this is the dawn of a new era. The sun is shining, and Abu Shmaba says to him, because it happened to be Paris's 70th birthday. This is your birthday present, Mr. Perez. And then, you know, wiping away the sleep from his eyes, they signed the document. What was I interested in? What was I looking for in the new Midlands? Because I remember from having read it the last time around. The rebirth of the Palestinian people, not rebirth, birth, there never was, there never is, there still isn't. How will peace come to the Middle East? Peace will come to the Middle East through a few strategically located industrial parks. Jobs, provide jobs for the Palestinians. Raise their level of income, their standard of living. A number of malls, big shopping malls. And these big shopping malls, I imagine, an Old Navy, a Lord and Taylor, an Allmart, you understand? The whole 4 or 5 chapters in the book are talking about economic development. There will be a tax-free, duty-free zone. It's going to become Singapore. And I'm thinking to myself, Shemu Shemayim, the man doesn't get it. And if I needed any proof, these are things that I wrote a few weeks ago, wrote all sorts of notes. I don't think I have it. I think I left it at home. Some woman wrote a book and they reviewed it in the Jerusalem Post. It's all about religion, stupid. That was Thursday. I read this. Funny. All the notes that I have in my little book on it. She says, there's no war going on against Israel because of economy or money or land. That's not the issue. This is a struggle that's fueled by religion. Now, the problem with our secular leadership is they don't understand the meaning of Mesiras Nefesh for Shabbos, for Kashrus, for Tarif. They don't know the meaning of self-sacrifice or something religious. So they can't begin to understand what motivates the enemy. They don't know the enemy that's there before them. They think you'll throw a few bucks at them and you'll raise their standard of living. You'll pour in billions of dollars. And Paris went out to raise money in the world, you understand? A high-powered mishloach. You understand? Sure, the money for the Palestinians. It all went, was lost. It was all eaten up. It was all stolen by the leadership, corrupt leadership. If you remove God, and even their perversion, of course, of God, this is a perversion that's not the God of Yosher and Tzedek and goodness. Plus not. We're supposed to show that to the world. But if you don't understand the fervor or the strength, the hold, the power that religion has over a person, you can't begin to understand the Islamic enemy. And I hold that people who cannot naturally express the name of God, and it's a Tachil Hashem, I'm telling you, I hope they didn't hear in heaven Hania saying that Allah has given us a great victory, and then the speeches of Olmert and Barakita. You know who the leadership of this country is? the man in the street and the soldier on the front. There were no secular Jews in foxholes. I mentioned last week that our grandson was in deep in Gaza at the wedding of his brother a week and a half ago. He came out for a day after the wedding. He got to one of the Sheva brothers and he comes to the house and he's sitting and he's talking. It seems that they had been, this was before the war yet, right before the war, there was some place up in the Shomron, and they had to get buy certain kalim for pots, pans, other things. And he's one member of an elite group of 10. 9 are secular, and he's a religious boy. He says, it was Erev Shabbos there, and he says, I can't use it until we take it to the mikveh. As we spill out, he explained to Masara, we have to find a Magan in some place. And by the way, these kids know every spring in the country. His brother, the Chosin, is most probably the greatest expert on springs in this country. And by the way, when the Rebbeinu told Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm bringing you to a land where there are Yanot Utahumot Yotzim Bapika Ubahar, there are rivers and streams and wells. They are all over. All over. Anyway, they found a Mayan, they were table the Kalim, and then later they sent out. They brought something, and he said, no, that's not so kosher, not sure it's kosher. So the Shemeneh says, oh, I'm not going to tap it on my yarn, we'll take it in. We'll put it in my yarn, it'll come out kosher. The man in the chayal in the front, he's from whether he knows it or not. They are worthy of better leadership. They're worthy of much, much better leadership. Because I'm telling you, point number one that I want to make is that a leader who cannot appreciate the power and the depth of religious commitment cannot begin to assess the enemy that Jews face worldwide. Certainly cannot assess or understand the enemy within our very midst. You think you can buy him off with a few bucks, you're going to turn him into a Jew lover, give up war for all time. That's a big, big lie. Number two, if I'm going already, I haven't begun the shiur yet, maybe we'll begin next week. I don't know, you don't have to start the shiur every week. It's the second thing. The secular nature of our leadership is therefore a leadership that sees absolutely no sanctity or meaning to a piece of land. A piece of land is nothing more than real estate. You can give it away, you can bargain it away, you can throw it away, because there is no meaning, no serious meaning attached to it. And if there's no serious meaning attached to it, so you can have it one at the same time. And an Islamic world that will not be willing to give up on one single inch of land in this country. It's all ours. This is a religious conviction of theirs that it belongs to them. According to Islamic law, any land that was ever inhabited by Muslims becomes, I'm afraid to use what the Gemara would have used. Any land that they lived on is kitchol shaita, the kitchol osid lovo, is sanctified to the time and sanctified in all time. There's no way to undo that sanctity. It's theirs, and they will wait until the end of time, until the death. But when you're dealing with people on the other side who don't have that religious conviction, before this war broke out, I mean, they've been running around like Shigoyim to make a deal with Syria. Is there anybody who understands why anybody would want to give the Golan Heights away? Why you'd give it in the Shabbat? Everything that we ever gave up, we have to go back. The Rebbeinu Shmuel has the last laugh. We moved out of Yehuda Shomron. Tzahal had to go back in because they were sending in suicide bombers. The only reason why Yehuda Shomron is quiet is because Tzahal is there. Tzahal had to go back into Gaza, and if they think Lechved Obama, they will bring every Israeli soldier out of Gaza, they're going to have to go back. I think we talked last week about the fact you can't thwart God's plans. God's plan for history is that there is social reality. You can't thwart God's plan. We're going to learn a little bit about the parsha. And you know what? I know this. I'm going to call this year Bereishis. And next week's year is going to be called Sefer Sheni.
You've got to stay another week.
It'll be a continuation of us. There was a great deal that I had to say and I didn't say it yet. But it's all relevant to next week's letter as well. So let's close at least with the Abarbanel. Number three is the Abarbanel. Paro, for your holy Moshe, number three, Paro disagreed with Moshe, the Shlosha Shoroshim. Three root ideas. Moshe Hiniach, Mitziyut Sivari Shana. Moshe is the one who said, Mitziyut, the existence of God, is the first cause. Mechuyah HaMitziyut Me'atzlam, God must exist. Uparo Hikshish Mitziyuto. And Paro was one who denies the existence of God. Vomro, and he said, Lo Yadati Yad Hashem. He said, I don't know who God is, what are you telling me about Hashem? Hashorish Hasheni, the second root difference between Moshe and Paro, Shiri Moshe Hiniach She'elokah Mashgiach Becholtar Kebri Adam. Moshe believed with absolute faith that God's divine providence, he watches over everything. Body and knows exactly what every human being does. To give a person what he deserves. Uparo kishezeb yomron. Paro denies this when he said, Mi Hashem, who is God? I don't see him. He's not here. He's not involved in history. And the third root. Shemoshe Niyah, Shel Lekah Hamashgiach Habu, who will King Israel, Bal Hakochot Bahayicholet, the God who watches over this world is the God of Israel, the one who has the power and the ability. Yachol Shanot Tivei Hadvarim, Umechadasham Bechlau Ubefrat Kiritzano, God can change nature dramatically. Uparo, Yakshisho, Biyadon Uparo, rejected this and denied it by saying, Me Hashem HaShereh Shema B'Kolo, who is God that I have to listen to his voice on? He can do something to me. He can touch me. He can hurt me. I don't see him. I don't know him. Bitzono Omar, Ma'i Yecholet Yeshbo. What power does he have? What ability does he have? She'et Konar Lefono, that I should bend before him, Lishma B'Kolo, to listen to his voice. Because of this, bo hamakot mechuvanot. So the Abraham didn't say that the makot came calculated in order to teach Paro these three lessons. Bo shalosh makos rishonos. Oh, well, neizeh bo hamakos mechuvanos la'amis shloshet hasheroshim ha'ele to show that these three roots are true. La'amet mitziyut hakel, to say that the existence of God is true. The first three makot. Dan tzadeya kinyan. La'amet hasharash hasheni, to prove the second root. Mitzalolama, which is that root. Sheyesh shama l'tayim ha'shgiyach u'manhig, not only is there a God, but this God is also the one whose divine providence rests upon us, and He leads the world. Bo shalosh makot hashniyot, the second three makot. Don't say that, okay? Oro teve shrit. Bo shalosh makot hachrona. However, the last three makot, bo la'amet, et hashodesh hashlishim, they come to teach us the third root. Vehu hayoto yidvarach yachol lishanot hadvarim hativiyim kivitzano. He can change nature. He can absolutely change nature. Now the fact is, it would take a lot of time in order to explain precisely how the Abarbanel arrives at these, how he takes the three roots and shows them to be related to each of those makos. We had said some years ago, and Shir from the Aruch HaShulchan, how the Tzach HaBarz Barchav do represent these three, but here, well, Abarbanel is a bit different. We can make an argument for all of it. Lefi Abarbanel, that's this last paragraph here. Lefi Abarbanel, boy, they call Shlosha Kamar Zodin from the Tzach HaBarz Barchav, according to the Abarbanel, these three groups of the Tzach HaBarz Barchav, at the beginning of each one, there's one of those psukim, in order that you should know Laman Tendakien Hashem, you should know that I'm God in the midst of the land. Lelamed et Mitzchayim Ladatat Hashem, that Mitzchayim should learn to know God in Shalosh Bekinos, in three specific ways. Kepodei Hakol, Kadoneh HaHistoria, Ukmoshel Beteva. When I was learning it, I wrote the English on the side, to see him as creator, as master of history, and the ruler of nature. If we have to take this, if we have to use the Nisiv, creator is Sefer Bereshis, master of history is Sefer Sheni, and ruler of nature is both Bereshis and Sheni. In Bereshis, we are told that he created nature, and in Sefer Sheni, we're told that he can at will dramatically change and undo nature. You talking? Alright, okay. We'll take a look at number four, and with that we'll close. I said at the beginning, Bereshis and Sheni, one is Din, God's mighty hand, and Sefer Sheni is Rachamim, God's mercy, because ultimately the great story of Sefer Sheni is, as the Ramban said, it's the Sefer HaGeula that Jews are redeemed. And see these two themes side by side. Two psukim. It's like you can feel it in the psukim. Then Atati et Yadiv in Mitzrayim, I will put my hand in Egypt. V'hotzeiti et Zivotai et Ami b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim b'shvatim gedolim. In this pasuk, it's fascinating. In this pasuk, you have din at the beginning, din, judgment, punishment at the end, and God's infinite mercy in the middle. The Natati at Yadiv in Mitzrayim, I will bring my hand against Egypt. That's, of course, God's punishment. The middle of the pasuk is just the structure of the pasuk is so beautiful. You should never look at a pasuk like it's just another pasuk. There is no other pasuk. Every pasuk is special. In the middle, sandwiched in between the Natati at Yadiv in Mitzrayim, I will bring my hand against Egypt. And the end of the pasuk, b'shvatim gedolim, great punishment I will bring. In the middle it says the purpose I will take out my hosts at Ami B'nai Yisrael, my people B'nai Yisrael, the Eretz Yisrael, B'shvatim Gedolim. And then there's another passage. V'yadu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem Mitzrayim will know that I'm God. Two parts to this passage. How will they know that I'm God? You can know God not only by His punishment, but by His great compassion. First half of the passage. When I will stretch out my hand against Egypt. Second half of the passage, and I will take Israel out from their limits. The whole purpose of all of the matters is to learn the essence of God's existence in this world and the way in which he conducts himself in this world. Is we've had some losses, but there's no question about it that 6, 7, 8 thousand kasanim, you understand, if there wouldn't be a Rabbeinu Shleilam here, I'm afraid to think of what kind of death and destruction that would be. But we've become already they're not become callous about it. We have to understand that there's a something going on before our very eyes, and you know what? Even 6, 7, 8 thousand Hasanim still don't knock sense into our leadership. And you know, I was never such a big fruman, but now, I'm not apologizing. But it's very bad. The fact is today, watch what I'm going to quote. I'm going to quote Ben Gurion. Wasn't it Ben Gurion said, the one who believes in miracles is a realist? Did he say it, or did the Chafetz Chaim say it? our whole existence here is one big miracle. You have to be able to see God. So that Chaleri of Russia, who will burn in Gehenna Haniyah, is able to say, Allah gave us a miracle, you understand? The Rebbeinu Shel Olam, don't listen to our politicians. We say that we know that there's a Rebbeinu Shel Olam who watches over us. And in place of honor, we're all going to say thank you, Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Keep taking care of us. Yeah, Amashe.